Welcome to In the News, Conversations Around Security, a new and dynamic podcast where we dissect the day's headlines through the critical lens of security risk management and where awareness meets analysis. Join us on the 1st and 15th of each month as we bring you a fresh episode packed with informative debates, expert analysis, and thought-provoking insights offering a nuanced perspective on the stories that shape our world. So buckle up and join us for a look at what's in the news, Conversations Around Security. Hello, folks, and welcome to In the News, Conversations Around Security. I'm your host, Luciano Cedroni, with me, Brian Clayman, as always. And today's episode, we have a very special guest to talk to us about what the topic's going to be, which is basically foreign entry, countering interference in Canada. Is that okay, Brian, or did I mess up the title?
You messed it up, you know, but I think Al will sort of explain it when he...
Yeah, he's going to have an opportunity to explain it. But yeah. Welcome to today's episode. It promises to be an interesting one, if not concerning or scary, as we delve into the shadowy world of international espionage and its impact on Canada. Today, we're tackling a growing concern, foreign interference in Canadian affairs. And joining us is a very special guest, someone who spent years navigating the intricate world of intelligence and now heads up the ANTNO group, Al Tredenick. Is that right, Al?
Tredenick.
Okay, there you go. There's my European background screwing that up. Let's keep it going. Al is the CEO of ANTNO Group, a global public safety and risk consultancy. Prior to founding the company, Al spent 32 years with the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, also known as CSIS to the rest of us, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Al currently sits on the corporate board of Global Innovations, as well as serving as a senior strategic advisor for a number of public safety and security companies, providing solutions to the public safety, security, and defense sectors. But hey, you've got the credentials, you've got a long and extensive past. So yeah, it needs to be recognized, and I don't apologize.
I just want to say one thing before we go to Al. Guys, it was a nice talk. We're out of time. We'll see you next week.
That's what I was going to say. This is the shortest
podcast I've been on. Jesus Christ. All right. Well, thank you and welcome to the show, Al. I'm going to give Brian an opportunity to say hello and then, give you an opportunity to introduce yourself or say hello to the group. Go ahead, Brian.
Al, great to have you. You are a wealth of knowledge. I love listening to you and your cohorts on Spies Like Us, your podcast. It's not as good as ours, but it's getting there. So we'll give you a plug. But we're thrilled to have you, Al.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. It's an honor to be on your podcast. And you paved the way for us.
Oh, okay, well, that's good. I'm glad. We will take all the accolades we can. So thanks for
and
that.
You should. I mean, we patterned it. We just wanted to be three guys talking in a bar, and
yeah,
the listeners would be at a next table just listening to.
Exactly. It's the best way.
What you get is raw comment and opinion. You don't get exactly the party lines or any script.
We originally tried for three guys, but we couldn't get anyone that wanted to join us. So we settled with two.
Although we do have a shirt that's black and white striped in the closet for anybody who wants to step in as a third person, but let's leave that. All right, let's jump right in because I think there's going to be a lot of discussion. We're hearing a lot about foreign interference. It was in the press for a long, long time. It seems to have died off lately because, I think the government's trying to change, sort of deter the vision somewhere else. But certainly when it came to the election meddling is the one I think that grabbed most of the headlines. There's going to be a hearing, an investigation into that. So we expect to see the follow of that in the short term. But before we get into the specifics, Al, can we explain to us what exactly are we talking about when we talk about foreign interference? What is it? Secret spies, coming around the building at night, or is it breaking into your computer? What kind of stuff are we really talking about?
So it's basically all of that. It's not just involving the intelligence agencies, but it also involves other government entities, business, and we can get into that as well. It's called hybrid warfare. But maybe I'll start by saying that the foreign interference issue is not new to Canada. It's been going on since the end of World War II. And until the end of the Cold War, it was the Communist Party of the Soviet Union that utilized an organization called the International Department, which was used to distribute pro-Soviet propaganda, infiltrate political parties, bureaucracies, labor unions, peace movements, all of that. And it was to promote, the Soviet line. It's similar to what we see today, especially with the revelations coming out from the media leaks, which led to the foreign interference in our elections inquiry. And I'll say that the foreign interference issue is bigger than just our two elections, right? Even though even the opposition has said they didn't impact the outcome of the elections, the question remains is how can we be sure that they didn't when we have things like a political party allows membership at their constituency level to non-citizens to be able to vote who would represent that that constituency for that party. I mean, things like this just shouldn't be happening, right? Exactly. So in China's case, it uses, and that's the big one right now that everybody talks about. So in China's case, it uses the United Front Work Department in a fashion similar to what the old Soviet International Department did. It uses political, business, academic elite capture, what's called elite capture by the UFWD. Mm-hmm. And it's been particularly effective. And that's where it comes it, as part of this hybrid warfare, or what's called hybrid warfare. And that's what's facing Western countries today, right? And yeah. For example, you know, many of the Liberal Party donors, and I'll use the Liberal Party, but it's not just them, have direct dealings with China, either through their businesses, law firms, lobbying activities, or personal close personal connections with the Chinese government officials. So it is a big issue. And as far as Canada, the problem we're facing, which you can see in some of the inquiry evidence coming out or testimony, is that Canada doesn't really have the legal framework, political will or the legal framework to address this issue.
Yeah, and it is a lot more serious than I think people think. And again, I'm trying to keep it high level for some of those who might not know or be familiar with why these things go on. But you mentioned the Western world. Is Canada amongst sort of the more targeted ones? Are we sort of on the top of the list that they're trying to target? And why would that be? What are they getting from us?
So look, that's exactly what I just mentioned. We're kind of seen as the soft underbelly right now for the United States, UK, and it's mainly because we don't have the tools, the regulatory, legislative, or the judicial tools to address this or to deter it. And it's more and more, it's becoming apparent that we are a bit of a risk to our allies.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that now when we're left out of alliances such as, you know, the Five Eyes. You're familiar with the Five Eyes,
of course.
Okay, well, now it's kind of switching to the Three Eyes, as we've seen with the UK, US, and Australia. And Canada should have been part of that. We are a Pacific nation, and it boggles the mind. And we're not addressing these things. And when I say tools, a very simple tool would have been for the government to implement a foreign agent registry. Mm-hmm. Our other partners have it. The allies have their own version of it. We could have probably taken pieces of each, the US and the Australian one, to build our own, but we haven't done that yet. That's supposed to be part of the foreign interference inquiry. It boggles my mind that we can put in a plastics registry, which has just been announced to follow the life cycle of plastics, but we can't do that with foreign agents. They're representing foreign governments, and this makes no sense to me.
No,
I don't want to put on my conspiracy hat. I had a discussion before with someone, a colleague that's a conspiracy believer, but the simple question, why? Why haven't we done it? It's not
so, absolutely. So I think what's happened is it's the elite capture I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. It's particularly bad right now, or has been. I think it all started, you know, quite a few years ago. It's both parties are part of this. It's when China was seen as a huge market for business. And Canada wanted to diversify its dependency from the United States over, you know, and pick some other markets to go after. And one of them obviously was China. What they didn't follow was how China has evolved. And as the rise, it's a rising, it's the next superpower, right? I always call it kind of the American, the American decline and the rise of China. And that's what we're facing now, but nobody followed that. And the Canadian, as I said, the business, political, academic elite were all enamored with this, went all in. A lot of our, particularly on the Liberal Party, are connected to Chinese business. They're on, they serve on boards, or they have a lot of Chinese business. So I think that's why there is such a hesitancy. Plus the what I talk about the front groups that infiltrate to promote pro-China foreign policies. Have a particularly strong presence in Canada. And I think back in 2009, the CSIS director, Dick Fadden, had mentioned about politicians coming under their influence and had been identified at the municipal and provincial level. It's also occurred in the federal level. So there's a number of reasons why we haven't done it.
It's bad enough the naiveness that we've shown and displayed, where we want to align with China without only looking at the good and the financial benefit without understanding the sinister underbelly. Okay, talk for a second about the frustration CSIS, the intelligence agency, has, because you guys weren't fooled, you weren't asleep at the switch. How did this happen?
Well, I think part of it is it's Canada, and there's never been an interest in national defense, national security, public safety. Traditionally, that's never been an issue. Definitely with the politicians, it's not a vote getter with their constituencies, and that is until something directly affects. Yeah. The general population, and in this case I'll use public safety. So public safety wasn't a big item for this government either, and until the epidemic of vehicle thefts, organized vehicle thefts, were occurring, and then the general population feels that threat, starts putting pressure on their local politicians and representatives, who then have to answer for it, and then are saying we got to do something. They pony up more resources, or make it more of a, have the law enforcement make it more of a priority. So they were directly affected. What we don't have on the national defense and national security side is a similar direct threat or impact that is visible to the general population. So this would be a completely different conversation if, say, on the terrorism side, bombs started going off in this country.
Yeah.
Similar to the FLQ crisis way back, right? Once that started, then we ended up with the War Measures Act being enacted and all the things that happened after that. It would be the same during for national defense. We basically need a war. The last time we upgraded all our equipment and training and the budget, et cetera, was when we went into Afghanistan. So it takes some sort of event before the population gets mobilized behind it, becomes aware of the issue. And I think that's part of what you mentioned, our podcast, The Spies Like Us. That's one of the things we're trying to do with that podcast, is raise the general awareness of national security issues as they relate to Canada. And I think it's just because the population, we don't have a history of this. We've always been able to rely on the United States to have our back, basically. Mm-hmm. And we're pretty secure. We're on a, you know, I kind of call it the an aircraft carrier in the world, and between us and the United States and Mexico, North America is. Yeah. That it's very hard to conduct for a foreign military operation. Conduct an activity, to conduct an attack in North America, just because of that. You know, we have very good counterterrorism and counterintelligence organizations. It's just by the geography that would make it far more difficult for foreign groups to come in and actually do an attack. Post 9/11.
Yeah, but by the grace of God, we've been blessed with the best geographical position to defend ourselves. Absolutely.
Exactly right.
But I do want to say, like, when we talk about foreign interference, I want to be careful. Like, the election interference is one thing, but how do you see, I mean, my concern right now, we talked, Brian and I briefly on the last podcast about, you know, we have 1.5 million people who came into this country. Is that not going to be leveraged by foreign nationals? Hey folks, if you're concerned about the security of your business, look no further than Brian Clayman & Associates. With its stable of experienced advisors and certified professionals, Brian Clayman & Associates provides tailored security solutions to help protect what matters most to you. Don't wait until disaster strikes. Give Brian Clayman & Associates a call today and take the first step towards a more secure future. When it comes to security, trust the experts. And now back to the podcast.
The intelligence service, we get back to foreign interference on this, and it's a separate issue from the counterterrorism side. But on the foreign interference side, the immigration streams have been used in the past by the intelligence services of other countries to infiltrate Canada, the United States, England. And as people leave their countries seeking a better life, the intelligence services will either insert agents into the stream, or they'll identify individuals that have family remaining back in their country that they will be able to pressure later. Once they were established in Canada, then that government can come in and pressure them to assist in whatever way. And we've seen that in Canada a number of times. The counterterrorism side, it's a little different than that. It's not so much the deliberate infiltration of operatives through the immigration stream. It's more a radicalization of certain individuals within that stream, whether they're here or whether they've started the radicalization overseas and then have come to say Canada. So it's a different dynamic between this foreign interference or / espionage and the terrorism side.
Now, to what kind of foreign interference is happening in Canada? We hear about the elections. Is that it, or are there other types of activities happening?
No, it's a lot larger than just elections. It's the intimidation of the diasporas, especially when they have family back home. They can be blackmailed. It's coming from a number of countries that are, it's basically state repression that's being done in Canada on Canadian soil against new arrivals, but also against, say, permanent residents and Canadian citizens. It's unacceptable that we allow this to happen. And that's why we need certain tools, certain changes to the justice system. And I'm thinking, you know, more about the intelligence to evidence issue. That could be another podcast of yours.
Yeah.
It is a big issue with some of what I call the unintended consequences of Supreme Court decisions, such as Stinchcomb or Jordan, that they never thought of things like this. And that's why national security prosecutions and terrorism prosecutions are so difficult in this country, and for the most part, and large organized crime, they can fall apart because the disclosure rules to protect sources and methods are onerous, can be an impediment to the actual prosecution.
Yeah, like everything's there for the bad guys. I think York Police just had an organized crime case that just fell apart, you know, years and years of investigation. But you said something that's got me thinking. Does that mean those Chinese police stations are not just giving out driver's licenses?
Yeah. So, I would say that, there's a lot of other activities going on that would be on the intelligence collection side by these stations that would lead to or could lead to the intimidation and co-opting of individuals in Canada within the communities. Two is they weren't official police stations, yeah. Such as, can you imagine Toronto Police opening up a station in Beijing? You know, it's they're just not that's not something that's allowed, and they've just gone ahead and done it. And
but you know what makes me angry, and it makes us look, no wonder we're no longer trusted within the Five Eyes. How did we let this happen? Like, what were we thinking? And I'm not talking about the intelligence agency, public safety, but our political leaders, what are they smoking?
I've said that before too. It is a head shaker that this could be allowed to continue. But as I said before, if there's no interest in national security, national defense, or public safety by the general public, the politicians aren't going to pick this up.
You're right.
And the politicians are looking at, rather than for the greater good, they're always looking at, especially in the last, I'll say 20 years or so, they're always looking at, or more so looking at power and remaining in power, or how are we going to get elected, and catering to certain elements within their constituencies just to garner that vote. And, you know, I think that's to our detriment. There should be putting Canada first, no matter what party you are. This is a nonpartisan issue.
Yeah, I agree.
Or it should be.
Brian, oh, I thought you were going to cut me off.
No. I'm going to let you jump in.
Well, I want to just say, okay, so it's a serious issue. I don't think anybody on this call certainly has to be explained how serious it can be. But for the average Joe, you're saying, you know, it's going to take an event. Is there other things that we could try to bring to their attention to stir interest from the public? Like the average Joe Canadian, why should they be concerned about what's going on right now? Like, okay, so who cares? Trudeau stays in power for another 4 years. I mean, to be really simple and crass about it, right? Like that's the extent, I think, of most Canadians' mindset when it comes to espionage. Well, it's no big deal. It's not hurting me, but I think it is. Would you agree?
It boils down again to the lack of awareness of what's happening. It also boils down to the lack of successful prosecutions on these issues, and that again, comes back to the issue of having the right tools, the right legislative framework, the right judicial framework. And I think podcasts such as yours, such as Spies Like Us, editorials you're seeing more of that now. There's more people from the intelligence community, and I'm just speaking on the national security side. There's more people coming out and commenting on issues and providing their opinions. We're seeing it on national defense now too, where retired national defense leaderships are coming out saying what's wrong here. You know, this is, we can't do this, we can't do that, our equipment, you know, is obsolete or it's not working or whatever. They're telling the story. They're telling the truth. And it's like, you got to tell the emperor he's not wearing any clothes.
Yeah, I think that's important. But also, you know, it really, I don't know if I want to use the term whistleblowers, but I think of Admiral Mark Norman with the procurement scandal. You know, Deputy Chief of Defense Staff, and where's he now? Like, he's a great guy, and he's on the media circuit, and he's talking, and I think he's doing a lot of value, but there's a price to pay. And you know, we started to talk about foreign interference, but it just goes to show you sort of how screwed up our societies are, you know, our naiveness. Douglas Murray, the journalist in the UK, was saying that part of the problem is he sees it is people have grown up with this peace dividend. There's a whole generation. They're not old farts like you and me, and Luke's sort of a young old fart type thing. But like, you know, I lived through the Cold War. I went to school, and I was told that if the Russians launch, well, I got to go under the desk type thing.
How is that working, right?
Exactly.
We didn't know any better then.
Like, I'm a Montrealer. You know, I was like 45 minutes from the U.S. border. I could have gone drafted into Vietnam. So that was my reality. That's your reality. Young people today just know good stuff. They don't know that the freedoms we had, like the demonstrators that are out there, all the nonsense that's going on, you know, freedom is not free. Someone paid for it, you know, and we're letting it slip away. And that's what's scary. And this is just one of many things that are happening right now that are chipping away, because our adversaries know exactly what they're doing. We're just like lambs to the slaughter.
Absolutely. And that comes back to the hybrid warfare, right? And and that's what the West is facing right now. And it's the destabilization of the democracies. The issue, if the United States goes back into an isolationist stance, that'll increase the chances of another world war. And if you look back, that's how the Second World War started, right? The United States was isolationist policies. And it wasn't until, well, basically two things. One was Pearl Harbor, but the other was a Canadian, William Stevenson, who was actually an agent of influence, since we're talking about foreign interference, who worked out of New York, but was working to get the United States into the fight, not just with material and ammunition, but actually committing arms and troops. And so it's a little ironic that we're talking about the foreign interference, and it really kind of started with start with him, but he was kind of part of it, but part of this foreign interference stuff.
Like, in some respects, it's almost like the canary in the coal mine. You're right. You know, like, we're lucky, as you said, because North America is separated from the rest of the world by ocean. So that gives us some level of comfort. You know, they're not going to be having tanks rolling across our border anytime soon. But the foreign interference is the way they're coming in, and we're asleep at the switch.
Well, yeah. That's right. And just to give you, especially for in your industry, so the foreign interference, the individuals that are working on behalf of these foreign governments, whether they be intelligence officers or part of these other organizations that, like the United Front, they will use individuals within, say, private security firms in Canada to actually conduct investigations against individuals, interview individuals, kind of on the intimidation side aspect of it, but collect intelligence on individuals, especially if they're anti-regime activists, etc. So it's very important that the private security firms in Canada, you need to know your customer. You have to do due diligence now on this. My company actually ran across this in Toronto, where a client of ours was, there was surveillance being done on this client and the client's family. We detected who the surveillance was. We took it back to an organized crime group. Mm-hmm. And the organized crime group was in touch with a foreign embassy. This is the stuff. And now, that was just, you know, it was an organized crime group. It wasn't a private investigator, mm-hmm. but it could have been. Yeah. A private investigator. And we do know of cases where that has actually occurred. In fact, there's charges now against a former RCMP officer who was doing...
out west?
That's right. He said he was doing due diligence and providing information to a Chinese think tank, etc. And I mean, the charges, that remains to be seen how that prosecutional will roll out, but that's the type of thing that's happening.
We've talked about some of the considerations or the impact that it's had on our intelligence services. We're no longer sort of in that inner circle with the Five Eyes. I think that's right. Concerning given, you know, the state of the world right now. We're marching towards more towards the drums, the war side of the path than the peace side of the path. And to go into that situation without having trust between our traditional allies, or at least influence somehow, you know, what's it like if you were in charge right now, what would you be focusing on if you were able to say, this is what Canada needs to get in order quickly to get back on the right side of the sort of the right side of the page with our allies and establish that or regain that trust?
Well, let's first of all, I'll say it isn't a disaster. It's not a dumpster fire. I'm sure the intelligence community is still fairly plugged in with one another. It's more on the political side and the foreign policy goals and support, etc. What could Canada do? It's probably amending the criminal code. It's strengthening The tools, the legislative regulatory tools, such as setting up a foreign agent registry with strong compliance provisions for individuals who don't register. It's on the legal side. It's finding a reasonable way to have the ability to bring intelligence into evidence for prosecution's purposes, and still maintain the protection for sources and methods. Mm-hmm. Now, we do have a regime for that, but it's very cumbersome. It doesn't guarantee in the end that will happen, and that's that they will be protected. And that's part of the reason why you'll see Crown's withdrawing or staying charges, because of they can't guarantee that the federal court will protect the source and methods, because there's certain things they can do. They can actually say, no, all that information's got to be provided to the defense under Stinch Column. Two, only you can write summaries with protection. Or three, no, everything that's all protected. Mm-hmm. So they can do one of three things, but that's at a separate level. That's not that court that's dealing with the actual charges. So once the Crown objects to, under the Canada Evidence Act, for certain information to be disclosed to the defense, then that issue has to be dealt with in the federal court. So it just adds more time. Yeah. You know, it's just a cumbersome system. And I think one of the things they could do, and I'm not a lawyer, but I don't see why they couldn't figure out a way of having the trial judge decide on these issues.
Luke, can I just ask a quick question? You talk about Stinchcomb. It got me wondering, the Supreme Court and the judiciary are making these decisions, okay? They're making it without understanding what the broader geopolitical ramifications are, I suspect. Is there an opportunity, or maybe it happens, does CSIS and our intelligence community have the opportunity to educate our political leaders, our judicial leaders, so that they understand?
No, not normally. That was offered way back when I was still in. The justice community tends to want to keep its arm's length, and I can understand that. Beyond what is available out there to them, if they're aware, or they make themselves aware of the geopolitics, or you know, they tune into podcasts like ours.
Yeah,
for the most part, no. And that's why I call it the unintended consequences of some of their decisions.
Is there anything optimistic to take away from what we've been doing so far? You know, I have to throw a curveball at you, but has the government, or do you see anything sort of changing for the positive? Like, is there anything that you would say is going in the right direction at this point?
The right direction is the awareness is starting to rise, I believe. You're seeing more individuals taking an interest in what's happening. Part of that is the foreign interference inquiry. The other is, like I said, podcasts like yours and ours, and people actually speaking out from the practitioner level. It's not just academics talking. Yeah. Now you're getting practitioners coming out and saying, well, this is what the real story is, without giving up, you know, the state secrets.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
This is what is happening, folks. Wake up. And I think it is coming. They're now seeing it. I think without being partisan, I think a change of government may. I'll reserve judgment on that, just because it's the same thing. If there's no interest or awareness by the general public, then the politicians aren't going to care.
Yeah.
They've got other issues, right? And rightly so. I mean, jobs and the economy and everything are super important. But I think you also have to have a strong national defense, a strong national security, and a coherent public safety.
It's funny, like when you talk about I worked intel for a few years with CFSU. I was I did the organized crime piece of Italians. Imagine that, Italian guy investigating Italians. But one of the things that I always found frustrating was, you know, the amount of information that you do know as an insider, and you follow people around, you do all those things that Hollywood sort of exaggerates, and you start to see how people really act, where the real connections are, and then you see the public reaction to that. You know, politicians who are sitting on a pedestal saying how good they are, and you know damn well that they're not. Or you hear people talk about how, well, it's just a movie thing. There's no organized crime in Toronto. There's no, like, that to me, that was really frustrating. I can only imagine that it's 10 times worse for you guys because it's national security.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. It is a little frustrating to see some of that. You want to put some of these people up to, for an Academy Award. It's or they have such indignation that that the security service or the police are interested in them, and they're, you just shake your head. But it's, I mean, that's human nature. But I'll tell you, for anybody that if you wanted to, it's kind of a plug for both of them, but some very good reading that draws the lines to this foreign interference, particularly from China right now, and the hybrid warfare issue. There are two books that are out. One was written by Sam Cooper called Willful Blindness, and the other was by Scott McGregor and Ina Mitchell called The Mosaic Effect. And when you read those two books, they draw the lines so well to all the connections. Now, there are some inferences that, they'll make some leaps, etc. But for the most part, those books are bang on.
Well, great. That's great. Thank you for that resource. I'll follow up. I got the audio books. I listen to books all the time now, thanks to Brian.
They're good books. No kidding.
So listen, I think that's a good place to leave it. Before we sign off, if somebody wants to follow up with you, listen, I know you've got a podcast. Can you at least tell us where the podcast can be found, where people can listen in if they want to know more about this type of information and interested, actually, in what's going on behind the scenes in this country?
Right. So it's called Spies Like Us. It's three retired CSIS officers. One is Phil Gursky, who has his own podcast. Yeah. And the other is Neil Bisson. He runs the Canadian Intelligence Knowledge Network. And the podcast itself can be found on Spotify or Apple, I think YouTube. It's taking off. It's kind of it's an interesting discussion of three guys in a bar just shooting the breeze on national security issues. And like I said before, it's not scripted. It's and we inject a bit of humor. We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we're talking about some serious stuff.
But that's some of the best conversations happen over a couple of pints of beer, as we all know. Yeah. So. Brian, that's right. Any last words?
No,
Right.
Well, I say no, but then I go on for the commit. But I have just fallen in love with Spies Like Us, and Al, you're just an interesting guy, fascinating guy. We're getting tired of having Phil Gursky back, so we may have to get you back again to get a real perspective of what's going on.
Yeah, well, we make fun of him because he was an analyst, right? And analysts make fun of the field guys. They're just the knuckle draggers. They're the cerebral ones.
Well, I'll tell you afterwards what he said about you guys when he was at our podcast.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. Well, listen, let's leave it there for today. Thank you so much, Al. We really appreciate you coming on the show with us, giving your experiences, giving us your insights into a very important issue. And until then, or until next time, for everyone else to stay informed or get informed, more importantly, there's lots of resources out there. If you really have some interest in wanting to find out, there's no excuse. There's lots of resources available. Get informed, stay vigilant, stay safe. That's it for me. I'm signing off.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Thanks a lot.